Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors.
Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
All right, welcome to the show. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network. Online, sportingjournalradio.com, and you can subscribe to that podcast and iTunes. You can follow us on Facebook as well. Check out the Sporting Journal Radio Facebook page. You can see a lot of cool stuff, including a trail cam picture from North Dakota where a moose and an elk both show up next to each other on the trail cam. You don't see that very often anywhere, let alone in North Dakota. All right, we're going to talk grouse this week. We've got Matt Soberg on the show. We'll talk to Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods. It's brought to you by Lake of the Woods Tourism. LakeOfTheWoodsMN.com is where you can plan your trip to Lake of the Woods, whether you want to do some fall fishing yet, or, man, I'd probably start thinking about ice fishing because I don't think it's too far away the way fall has gone so far. Or if you want to get into one of those comfortable, warm snow bears at Devil's Lake, you can contact Haybale Heights Campground and Resort and do some guided perch and walleye fishing this winter. You want to stay mobile for perch, it's easy to do that in one of those snow bears. Go to HaybaleHeights.com for more details. Well, we're starting off the show right now in Brainerd, in the garage once again of Jamie Dittman. Jamie, we've done the show in the garage a lot because really this is where you spend most of your time if you're not out chasing stuff around.
Yeah, it's kind of where I hang out. There's always something to do, and it's not much for sitting in the house watching TV. I'd rather be building something.
Well, that's what you were doing because you're going to go elk hunting, so you're in here fabricating a contraption with a big wheel on it.
Yeah, we made these one-wheel carts to haul out elk on and haul your camping gear in, and it's I used one last year to haul my elk out, and it was great. Took a lot of work out of it, so we made another one this year.
I know you guys are calling it the one-wheel wonder. I prefer meat wheel, I think is a better name for it.
Meat wheel's pretty good. Yeah, that would work.
So tell us, was there a design you copied out there, or did you just kind of come up with this thing?
I saw one on the internet kind of like it, and so I just copied it and changed things around and made it all out of aluminum so it's really light, and used a fat tire wheel on it, and that really distributes the weight, and it's really, I mean, I passed last year three guys using a brand name game cart and just drove right by them with that, so.
Yeah, so the thing, it's got a wheel on it, and then handlebars or two handles that come out so you can wheel it like a wheelbarrow, and then you just put like saddlebags on it to put the meat in?
Yeah, you put saddlebags on it, then you can actually attach a front handle if you have two guys, or you could attach the two carts together and have a front handle so you could haul, you know, two elk with two guys, and it's kind of universal, and it handles pull right out and folds up so you can put it right on your back.
You're always building stuff, whether you're customizing ATVs, four-wheelers, trade show booths, or wrapping boats with graphics, things like that. What's the weirdest thing you can think of that you've ever built, either for yourself or for somebody else, Jamie?
I don't know. I've fixed lawn furniture. I don't know. I'll have to think about that.
All right, well, Jamie Dittman is our guest here, Sporting Journal Radio. He's getting ready to go out elk hunting in Montana. Now, you've been doing it for how many years now?
This would be my fourth year.
Fourth year. So you just, I mean, this isn't like a long-standing tradition for you. You just one year finally said, hey, I gotta start going elk hunting if I'm going to do this at some point.
Yeah, my buddies took me out 4 years ago and kind of got me hooked on it. It was a once-in-a-lifetime deal, and ended up going back three times that winter for about 30 days and finally got my elk. And then it was even more addictive. And the next year, I saw elk, missed a few opportunities. And then last year, I just ended up with a one-day hunt. So it's getting better.
For people out there listening, even a guy like me who's never gone out Montana elk hunting, but it's on the list. It's one thing I want to do. It's one of those things where there's only so many things you can do each fall. And as I get older, I start to realize, you know, I really enjoy doing this, but if I stop doing this, you know, at least for a little bit, I can go do that. And so I think I want to start, you know, maybe for next year, start planning an elk hunting trip to Montana. What's some advice you'd give to that person out there that's thinking about doing it for the first time?
You know, that's kind of why I did it last year by myself on public land, just to show people just that anybody can do it. I, you know, only bought a license, paid for my fuel going out, didn't, you know, just did a little research, get the Montana plat books, put on your phone Onyx Hunt, start looking for good chunks of public land. And it's, yeah, I wish I'd have started earlier, but you don't need to hire a big outfitter and spend a ton of money. I mean, you can do it. If a guy from Brainerd can do it, I said, you can do it.
And you know, you obviously tent camp, or you could sleep in the back of your truck or whatever. You guys are bringing out a fish house this time around to sleep in. So you don't have to go the hotel route even. What's so when you think about costs, you got, you know, obviously your gear, you've got fuel, and then a license. And it's a lot of different licenses out there to kind of sift through, right?
Yeah, we buy, you can buy just an elk, which is about $800. Or we buy a big game combo, which is elk and mule deer, a buck and a bull for $1,100. Or you can just, if your first year out, you can buy bee tags. You can buy a cow elk for $300 or a deer for $75, whitetail or mule deer.
Oh, that's not bad at all. Jamie Dittman, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, talking about heading out elk hunting in Montana. And you got one of those jobs, which is kind of nice, that you can say, well, how long do we want to go for this trip? Until we get our elk.
No, my boss has really never said no. He's always okay with it.
You mean the wife? Isn't that, didn't you mean she's always okay with it?
Well, she's usually okay with it.
So that's kind of the plan. And so what's one item when you go do this, especially when you're out there by yourself last year, what's one item that you make sure you've got with you?
Emergency blanket, you know, just a small something that'll make you survive for a couple days. A little bit of fire starter and emergency blanket. You can always survive off of that. The one thing as far as hunting is concerned that is the most important that I believe is boots. You got to have good boots because it's real easy to get blisters out there, and that will just ruin your week.
First year, you didn't have the right boots, or you had different boots than what you have now, I should say.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about elk hunting, and I brought my deer hunting equipment out, and you can't walk miles and miles in your deer hunting boots usually. You know, and anything from a good pair of, you know, like Danners, or I wear Kennetrex, but a mountain boot really helps you get set up, and you can put on those things without even being broken in and walk 10 miles and you're fine.
You look at deer hunters in Minnesota, and I'm one of them, so this is, don't take any offense if you're a deer hunter in Minnesota, but they're not always real concerned with weight, whether it's themselves or their gear. But you definitely think about that when you're going out elk hunting, don't you?
Yeah, like now, the good equipment that I have, the clothing, bought all Sitka stuff. I think 14 pieces of my Sitka gear weigh as much as my wool suit that I wear for deer hunting. And guns, you know, lightweight guns, lightweight everything, because ounces make pounds, and you start throwing 50 pounds on your back all day, and that, it makes it tough.
Well, and you think about all that gear, you're actually, your meat wheel or one wheel wonder kind of serves a dual purpose going in and coming out, doesn't it?
Yeah, now by using that, we can put extra stuff on there, so it's going to be a little easier to set up camp. You don't have to be quite concerned. We can actually bring some water instead of just a water filter. So yeah, we'll have it a little easier with that.
Jamie Dittman, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio. He's a fishing guide in the Brainerd Lakes area. What have you been hearing about, guys? Have there been guys out fishing lately?
Yeah, gull has been really good. The walleyes are really snapping. It turned over. One sec.
Hey, doesn't that person know we're on the radio right now? That's probably why they're calling. Hey, I'm listening to you on the radio right now.
It's live. Yeah, the walleyes have really been going good. Last week we were out one day and the crappies are going good, just straight off the deep basins. So, yeah, if you still want to go out in this nice warm front coming up this weekend and get some fish, now be the time.
And then how about, you know, we're going to do some grouse hunting around that Brainerd area. Have you been out in the woods at all much?
A little bit. Haven't seen much for grouse. Haven't been on a whole lot getting everything done to go out west here. But I've heard of some luck east of here more over by Palisade area. But throughout the rest of the state, I've heard numbers are kind of down a little bit.
All right. Well, good luck. Thanks for showing us how you build your meat wheel. It's not something I've ever said to anybody ever before. But good luck this week out in Montana, Jamie.
Thanks. We'll keep in touch from out there.
Jamie Dittman, Sporting Journal Radio. We'll talk to Matt Soberg and Hank Shaw. We'll talk rough grouse in central Minnesota. We've also got some fishing reports coming out from Lake of the Woods and Devil's Lake as well on Sporting Journal Radio. Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
We're back, Sporting Journal Radio. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network. Online, sportingjournalradio.com, or by subscribing to the podcast on iTunes. You can use those podcast apps on your phones, too, and listen to them while you're traveling. That's what I do. I hook my phone up through my car stereo and listen to podcasts like Sporting Journal Radio. And I'm sure that's what Matt Soberg is doing, because that's what he's doing right now, is traveling in the vehicle. Where are you headed, Matt?
I'm actually heading out to Grouse Cover, so I got a snuck a few extra hours available this morning, and I'm going to take advantage of this fall day. It sounds like snow might be coming here soon, so I want to hunt some woodcock before they fly away.
So you're hunting. So I call him up. He's like, "Well, I'm on the road. I'm traveling. You know, I'm kind of busy. I hope this works out that I'm on the road." No, you're going hunting. Is what you?
Yeah,
that's
I know. I joke around and say I'm lucky enough that if I'm in the woods and as long as I have a camera with, I'm working.
Yeah, so. That's right. And honestly, in your line of work, this is hunting or working to some extent. And I'm the same way. You know, I hunt and fish a lot, and people say, "Oh, you're living the dream. You got the life." And it's like, well, yeah, it is fun, and I do enjoy it. But there is a work aspect involved in it. And why don't you tell our listeners, Matt, what you're doing these days?
Yeah, for the last 6 years, I've been editor of the Rough Grouse Society magazine, and just branched out a little bit to take on some other titles. So over the last couple months, I've been editor of Cubby Rise magazine, which is an upland hunting magazine based out of Alabama. And they are also publishing a new upland hunting magazine called Project Upland, which is going to come out in November.
I've seen some of that Project Upland stuff on online, and there's some videos too, right? And it's good stuff. It's nice work.
Yeah, video. Trying to branch out into some other media channels, and kind of the game plan is to create some upland hunting related content that is attractive to sort of the next generation of upland hunters. So we all know how important recruitment is for hunters and trying to get more people to buy hunting licenses, and that's kind of the mission of the Project Upland group.
Well, you know, the best way to recruit hunters is showing them a video where you flush about 30 woodcock, and that's what we did. That's what we did this week. I don't know, I lost count. We were doing some filming with you for Prairie Sportsman Television, and we went on it was planned as a grouse hunt, and yeah, I knew there'd be some woodcock in there as well too, but really, Matt, it turned into a woodcock hunt.
Yeah, it really did, and it was, you know, I'm not going to say we got lucky, because if you do time it right, and you know what you're doing, and you hunt some of those the good habitat spots, you can get into woodcock this time of year. They're migrating down south, and you know, before the weather gets too bad, you can get into them in bunches. And we got lucky. We hunted a good spot. There were a lot of birds there. I didn't know if they're going to be there or not, but I don't know. I lost count, honestly, and it was mass pandemonium there for a while. But really, really fun, and I love hunting woodcock. I think it's an underrated bird. Not a lot of people, not as many people hunt them around here as I think they should. And we got into them, and hopefully I'm going to do that again here soon.
They are an underrated bird. Matt Soberg, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, talking about a grouse and woodcock hunt we had in central Minnesota this week. They're fun, and I was, like I said, expecting it to be more of a grouse hunt. But, man, I had a blast, and I wonder if they're underrated partly because of the migratory aspect to them. So when you almost have to time it right. It's almost like waterfowl to some extent. You have to get while the getting's good. And it was good this week. And I know we were talking beforehand. We were a little worried because of the cold weather we've been having. We were a little worried if the woodcock would still be around. And boy, they sure were. And how long? So let's start from the beginning. Obviously some probably stop here when they're migrating north and stay in Minnesota. But how far north do woodcock go? And then where do they travel when they go south?
Yeah, so when they head north, we actually do get a lot of what we call local birds that stop and breed and nest right here in Minnesota. But they'll go to northern Minnesota. They'll go up into Canada pretty far. So a lot of the birds that we're hunting right now, we call flight birds. They're heading back down south. They're coming from Canada. They're traveling. You know, they have in mind that they're going to get all the way down to Louisiana. They winter down in East Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, all the way over to the panhandle of Florida, actually. And so that's where you can hunt them down there. The season is usually mid-December through January down there, and a lot of people like hunting wintering woodcock, they call them down in Louisiana.
On average, how late can you find woodcock in Minnesota?
Yeah, woodcock is woodcock hunting since the migratory bird, just like waterfowl, so it's regulated by the federal government. And so the limit is three birds no matter what state you're in. And in Minnesota, typically woodcock season starts a week after the grouse season, which starts September 15th here. So it's roughly a week after. Sometimes, depending on the year, those openers do align, but it's typically a week later. And then the woodcock season here is always 45 days long. So check the Minnesota DNR for regulation, but it usually starts again the week after grouse season, and that runs for 45 days.
Okay, so we're getting close to the end of it then here, probably close to the end of October.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, there'll still be some, depending on the weather again, there'll still be some birds late season up to, like, pushing up next to Halloween.
Matt Soberg, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, talking to upland birds in central Minnesota, central northern Minnesota. That central Minnesota is kind of the gateway to grouse and woodcock country, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I live in Brainerd, and so if you go south of Brainerd, you get more into ag country, and then north of Brainerd, I call it more typical like the Northwood area. So from here north, you get into the timber companies, timber harvest, forest management areas, lots of public land, and so anywhere north of Brainerd, you can get into some good grouse and woodcock hunting.
And we got into some good woodcock hunting, and like you said, it was pandemonium there for a while, and I was trying to keep track of how many flushes we had, too, and every time I tried to come up with a number, another one would flush, and then one would go this way, and one would go that one, I'd lose count, and I just gave up on it after a while.
But I did, too. I mean, it was lots of birds all over, and the neat part about it is, I mean, I'll be honest, I missed a lot yesterday, but woodcock present a really... I would call it elite wing shooting challenge. You know, a lot of times they hold tight and they flush close, but when you're in the thick young aspen stands and they're zigzagging all around, they're really hard to hit.
They are tough to hit, and it helps to have a working gun because so here's a pro tip for you listeners out there. If you duck hunt in water that's over waist deep, and you have a sling for your gun and your shotgun sits underwater for a good chunk of the hunt, it's probably not recommended, first of all. But when you get done with the hunt, make sure you take your gun apart, dry it out, clean it, and make sure it's ready to go for the next hunt. I didn't do that. And so my gun has been a little rough. So when we were out there, Matt, I think I had four good opportunities at woodcock right away in the morning. And my gun misfired. My gun didn't go off each time. And, of course, they're on camera. So we've got some really cool woodcock footage and then me pointing my gun and then nothing happening, which, hey, that's conservation, right?
Yeah, that's the way it goes. That's pretty hilarious. We were joking yesterday. I just wrote an article about all of the excuses that grouse and woodcock hunters do. I didn't have that one down, but I'm going to write that one down now. That's gonna make the magazine.
Now you've got it. And the sad part is, it happened to me Saturday during the pheasant opener, too. And so it's I had great opportunities at pheasants, and I had some gun issues. So I need to do a little bit of work to the firearm. But then I think what happened is it rusted up a little bit in there, and it dried up, and I couldn't pull the trigger during the pheasant opener on Saturday. And then I lubed it up so much and oiled it that I think when we went grouse hunting and woodcock hunting in the morning there, it was below freezing when we started. And I think my gun froze up a little bit. and that was a problem. Sure. So once it thawed out, though, I was able to start knocking some birds down, and I got my birds, and of course we were out there hunting with Hank Shaw too, and he got his birds, or at least two. We each got two of them, and then you followed up and got two birds at the end. It was kind of funny how that happened.
Yeah, I was missing, to be honest with you. I was kind of down on myself, and you guys were getting birds, and then I snaked two right at the end. So kind of like a closer in baseball, you don't quit till the final buzzer goes off.
That's right. Well, it was a great hunt. We got some great footage for Prairie Sportsman, and we'll have an episode next season that you'll be able to watch starting in January, and maybe one of the coolest grouse videos I've seen. And there's some crazy grouse videos out there of, you know, grouse are weird creatures. They'll come sit on your gun barrel when you're deer hunting, and they'll get territorial, or they'll fly to go with you to your mailbox or whatever. But we had a grouse come flying straight at us when we started the first day. I mean, all of us that were there lined up could have reached out and grabbed it as it flew by.
I think we were only 100 yards down the trail. We just got started.
Yeah.
And I probably flushed from left to right, and I wasn't even paying attention. I probably could have shot at that one, and he got away, and then I took two more steps, and I saw this blur coming straight down the trail right at it, which never happens. And it flew by me and Hank so fast towards you. You ended up getting that bird, but Hank and I looked at each other and laughed and said we booked that bird right in the eye, and we knew exactly what he was thinking. He was trying to get out of there. So.
It was cool, and we've got footage of that, and check for Prairie Sportsman to see that video. You might even see it on social media before the season starts. I'm not sure quite yet, but great time. It was fun to get back. I hadn't grouse hunted for a number of years, and I hadn't had a successful grouse hunt for even longer, and let alone shot woodcock like that. I've never had a woodcock hunt like that. So I appreciate you taking us out and showing us around a little bit, and let us follow you with the camera for Prairie Sportsman. Matt Soberg, if people want to find your magazines, where should they go?
Yeah, right now my best email is probably SobergM@PuppyRiseMagazine.com. From there, I'll be using that email for all my publications. And if you have any ideas, questions, photos, submissions, anything upland hunting related, send it over, and I'd love to talk to you.
Perfect. Well, good luck this morning, and thanks for being on Sporting Journal Radio.
Thanks, Brett. Take care.
There's Matt Soberg. Coming up, we got a Lake of the Woods fishing report with Joe Henry. We'll check in with Lucas Mertens from Haybale Heights Campground and Resort in Devil's Lake. And Doug Lear from the North Dakota Game and Fish Department will update us on all things wild on the west side of the Red River Valley.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Haybale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Haybale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Haybale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
Sporting Journal Radio continues online, sportingjournalradio.com, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. Listen to the show and the podcast app on your phone as well. Check out our Facebook page, some very cool stuff on there, videos, pictures, and more from the outdoor world here in your backyard. We're going to check in with Robert Udney from Wild Images in Motion now for the best way to preserve your animal that you might get this fall. Now, when I first met Robert, it was at the Wild Sheep Foundation banquet in Minnetonka, and he had one of the coolest mounts I've ever seen.
You know exactly what mount I'm referring to, don't you?
I think it was the leopard and a gazelle.
That's the one.
Well, and I know you've done a lot. You do so many mounts like this with animals interacting, but that one just stood out to me, and maybe that was because that was the first time I'd seen your work, and it just was one of the coolest things. And I took a picture of it, and I show it to everybody, and I'm like, you guys got to see this. Check this out. And everybody is just blown away by it. Tell us a little bit about that mount, first of all.
That mount? That one came about just with the opportunity with someone with a leopard that had something a little bit smaller in size, which, you know, lended itself to a real action-packed mount. And, you know, taking into consideration, there's a lot of factors when we do a mount on what you want to portray in the animal. And sometimes with a bigger cat, you might not want to do that. So I had the opportunity to do something, and the customer gave me free rein to do whatever I wanted. So I thought I'd come up with some creative balance points and get this elaborate, well-balanced gazelle leaping over the leopard with a leopard paw. And it, in some ways, it's something that's been done before in some ways, but it was the balance points, which is hard to tell over the radio, are what make it really unique, because they both interlock into each other and then have a very small base. And somehow it all stands together. It's just like hitting everything right. So
it's like Jenga.
Jenga, yeah.
Well, it's amazing work, and it was that first impression I got of your work, and I was just blown away by it. It's really neat, and you like to have animals interacting in your designs, don't you?
Yes. That's really our whole purpose. We want to raise the level, and I know we've had this conversation before. We're trying to raise a level in quality and design for a lot of people, and this goes from beginner to very experienced hunters with large trophy rooms. There's so many people that have an opinion and have, you know, their own perception of animals and their animals' interactions. We try to work so closely with everybody, including wives and women, which makes it even more important for us in the way we do things, to make it appealing to everybody, or something that, you know, hey, it's just not that dead animal hanging on the wall, which you bring so many more people into the fold, which is something I think right now is very important with all that anti-hunting that's going on, or anti-hunting propaganda that's going on in the country right now, to get more people involved on the good side, and it shouldn't be something, you know, that you should be ashamed of in a couple of years. So that's what we strive really hard for.
Yeah, and I think too, it does a couple of things. I think it adds more drama to that design, to that mount, and also I think it gives more respect to that animal or animals that are involved, because, you know, some mounts just tend to start to look the same after a while. But I like seeing, and this also will bring other people into it, I like seeing those animals kind of in their natural environment. It's almost something like we do with parallel to the magazine that we do with Minnesota Sporting Journal. We don't just show pictures of people holding dead animals or dead birds. We like to show pictures of the animals alive and in their natural environment, and how they live and how they interact with other animals. And I think it makes it more interesting to view, and gives it more respect when you can see a mount of an animal in a kind of a natural environment like that. And you're actually doing a wolf for me right now. I can't wait for him. Robert, I'm so excited for this right now.
We're wrapping up, but Jessica, who works for me here, is wrapping up sewing him up, your wolf, right now. So we'll be sending pictures this afternoon for you a little later once we get on the base and stuff.
That's so cool. You've been sending me some photos, and we'll post some of those too at minnesotasportingjournal.com so people can see them. Is she doing a good job with it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
She's one of the best. but we're, you know, in there's a case in point with yours. You know, you sent me pictures of your animal, or I did have a couple, albeit a little bit farther away, before he was shot. And that's really important to us, even in what we're, you know, what we're going to end up talking about at the end of the conversation, just even with the a customer's white-tailed deer or a hunter's white-tailed deer. There's aspects, and there's each deer that I see is so unique in so many different ways, and people see them, you know, in their own way. and also, you know, just large necks or semi-rut, or there's sometimes there's a little brown patch with a white line in front of the nose, you know, the flesh patch. White-tailed deer are really cool all the way around. And having a hunter come in and, you know, showing us his pictures, and a lot of guys now have their deer on trail cam. So we've been doing with electronics help, is, you know, using those trail cam photos to position the deer how they, you know, they might have liked to pose that deer was doing on trail cam earlier in the year before they shot it. So,
Robert Utney, our guest, Minnesota Sporting Journal Radio. He's with Wild Images in Motion. Do people come to you, though, then with ideas like that, saying, hey, I got this picture of this buck that I shot on trail camera, you know, and he was reaching up and chewing on some leaves on the tree above him. Do people come up to you with ideas like that, or do you have some ideas and say, hey, why don't we try it like this?
Well, we have ideas, and all of us here at the shop are, you know, nature, you know, fanatics, and some of us hunt more than the others, but we're all interested in wildlife in some form. Two of my staff are one's gone to school for veterinary and knows anatomy like no one else, and that's come in really handy. But yes, we have ideas, but a lot of times it is a person, and it's just a lot of times I'm an interpreter, and they come and I pick things out of the conversation, and then, you know, I translate it and bring it back to life for them, which is one of my unwritten, or kind of, it's a skill I have that maybe not a lot of others have, not other Texans have. I tend to listen really closely to what people have to say about the hunt and what they were doing, and they know I can replicate that, and they bring that to me, so...
Well, it makes it more personal, I think, that way for the people. If they have they already have a connection to the deer, and if they can preserve it in a way that allows them to remember that connection for the rest of their lives, that's perfect. That to me is the whole idea behind getting something mounted. Robert, you and our guest, you talked about Jessica a little bit there. You recently opened up a new shop, and you've added some staff down there, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. Approximately 3,000 square feet. I have a full-time staff of three, and then I have two part-time employees. And we're here to help streamline the process and, you know, expedite mounts as quickly as we can with the highest quality that we possibly can. So.
Now, Robert, one question is going to come up. So say a guy shoots a big buck here this week. What can he do to prepare or to kind of get that buck ready to go if he's got to wait a little bit?
If he has to wait a little bit, he could, and I'm assuming there's a lot of things on YouTube and different videos, and they're more than welcome to give, you know, anyone here at the shop a call. If they want to cape the animal out, which they probably would anyway, and I think most people can do that. But again, if you have any questions, you can contact us. Or have your, you know, meat processor or butcher take the cape off, remove everything, even the face. Or if they have freezer space, you could put the rack and the whole cape, you know, as one piece and freeze it.
WildImagesInMotion.com is the website. You're also on Facebook. I recommend everybody going to their Facebook page, going to their website, see examples of Wild Images in Motion's work.
Motorists are reminded to watch for deer along roadways this time of year because juvenile animals are dispersing from their home ranges. Hi, this is Doug Lear with your weekly North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outdoors Report. October through early December is the peak period for deer vehicle accidents. Motorists are advised to slow down and exercise caution after dark to reduce the likelihood of encounters with deer along roadways. Most deer vehicle accidents occur primarily at dawn and dusk, when deer are most often moving around. Motorists should be aware of warning signs signaling deer are in the area. When you see one deer cross the road, look for a second or even a third deer to follow. Also, pay attention on roadways posted with deer crossing area caution signs. Deer vehicle accidents are at times unavoidable. If an accident does happen, law enforcement authorities do not have to be notified if only the vehicle is damaged. However, if the accident involves personal injury or other property damage, then it must be reported. A few precautions can minimize chances of injury or property damage in a deer vehicle crash. Don't swerve or take the ditch to avoid hitting a deer. Try to brake as much as possible and stay on the roadway. Don't lose control of your vehicle or slam into something else to miss the deer. You risk less injury by hitting the deer. That's this week's North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outdoors Report. I'm biologist Doug Lear.
Hey anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
All right, welcome back to Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network, online, sportingjournalradio.com, or by subscribing to that podcast, whether it be in iTunes or the various podcast player apps on your phone. If you're taking a drive somewhere, which, man, I did a lot of traveling in the last week filming for Prairie Sportsman down to Laverne, down in the far southwestern corner, up into central Minnesota to chase rough grouse with Matt Soberg and Hank Shaw, and listen to podcasts the whole way through the phone, through the truck. So it's a very simple and easy way to listen to this radio show right here. In fact, somebody described their podcast one time that was actually a radio show. Our podcasts are so good, they're actual radio shows. So they actually get played on the radio and also on podcasts. And I still want to try to get a fall trip up to Lake of the Woods yet and cover the whole state, because fall is such a good time up there, whether you want to do some grouse hunting or waterfowl hunting or get out and do some fishing. And we're going to talk fall fishing and even start planning some ice fishing trips right now with Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods Tourism. Joe, how are things?
Hey, Brett, things are really good. It's that we always talk about it. It's that confusing time of the year. Do you go after the waterfowl? Do you go after the grouse? Go after walleyes, crappies, muskies, or do you try to do them all?
So many options, and I try to do them all. It doesn't always work out that way, but I like to do all of them, and I try to do every single one of them. It's always a question: shotgun or fishing pole. And Lake of the Woods is one of those great areas you can do both.
Yeah, you can. It's really a neat time of the year. Too bad fall is so short. And man, you know, in Minnesota and certainly Lake of the Woods, like the rest of the state, we've had some inclement weather for a couple of weeks. We've had rain. This past week we've had some high winds. And you know, the high winds, man, that makes it tough to get out in that big lake. It stirs the lake up a little bit. I mean, it's been like screaming for a week straight or 5 days straight. And so you know, you work around it. So when that happens, you know, you go to the spots that you can fish. Some spots in the northwest angle, you can hug behind an island. You go in the Rainy River, and you can get out of the wind that way because it's small water, and you can duck behind a turn in the river. But there again, when you're doing that, you're not always fishing the exact spots you want to fish. And you know, anglers this time of year are hardy, and they're used to some of this stuff, and they're going out there making the best of it, and they're still finding some nice fish, and that's a saving grace. I talked to one person this week, and he said that, yeah, man, we found our walleyes, but it was kind of by right by shore, literally like a rod length offshore, and you had to be that close to shore in order to get bit. And I mean, it's interesting where you end up finding these fish.
Wow! So being that close to shore, they're up shallow, or is it kind of part of the river channel that's deep next to shore?
Yeah, it was probably in 5 feet of water that kind of goes right up to shore where it's a little bit deeper, and there's actually a little bit of a culvert area going in there. And. And it just one of the little places that the current kind of hits and pushes around, and it drops off pretty quick. And those fish were just pushed up against that bank, and they were just jigging them, you know, but with a jig and frozen shiner. But and then he also the Chili Bowl, you know, Border View has that fishing tournament called the Chili Bowl, and each fall, and it's on a Saturday, and it's kind of a laid back tournament. You know, no, you can't bring any fish over 28, and you can bring in all your fish under 19 and a half. And, you know, obviously we have our slot limit, 19 and a half to 28, you must throw back, and you can keep, you know, one fish over 28 per day. But for this particular tournament, it's not about big fish. It's about just normal eaters under 19 and a half. And they got some nice fish in that tournament too. And, you know, most of the people were jigging a bank, anchored up jigging. And they've released some water from the dam up in I Falls. And so there's a little bit more current coming down. So I know that they're using jigs up to 3/4 ounce to kind of maintain contact with that bottom. And, you know, for Lake of the Woods, walleyes, they don't care. It's stained water. And, you know, it doesn't have to be that finesse thing. In fact, many times you put that big piece of lead on there with one or two frozen shiners, and you thunk that thing, you pump it against the bottom. Pow, pow. That's kind of like dinner bell. And they'll come in there and whack it.
Did you tell me off the air that somebody caught a 55.5-inch muskie?
Yeah, I just posted it on our Facebook page. I shared it. But yeah, you know, this is a time of year. I mean, fall is traditionally a time when those muskies are also putting on the feed bag. So, yep. A lot of trolling right now for muskies. So people are trolling, rock points and wind blowing areas and things like that. But yeah, somebody whacked a 55.5 and it had a gut. And, you know, just like traditional muskie fishermen do, that fish was properly released and still swimming. But they've been getting a lot of muskies in the 50-inch class. And of course, a lot of fish below that as well. But it's a fun time because you can troll those big cranks now. And they're catching a lot of fish. And then what ends up happening is it's really kind of neat because, you know, accidentally they're hooking 20-plus pound pike. Every once in a while you hook a 9-pound walleye on your muskie gear. I mean, you never know what you're going to catch on Lake of the Woods, really.
Joe Henry, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, talking Lake of the Woods right now. And do you know, obviously there's guides up there for walleyes. And can you go up there and get a muskie guide to take you out?
Absolutely, you can. Yeah. And, you know, when you fish Lake of the Woods for muskies, you'll be fishing out of the northwest angle. And that's the very, very northern tip of Lake of the Woods and the Minnesota side. So you go up to a northwest angle resort, and then all those resorts will have guides they work with. And there's some really, really passionate, good muskie guides up there. What they typically will do is they'll take you into the Ontario portion of Lake of the Woods from a northwest angle, resort. And they'll slide you up amongst the 14,552 islands to some go-to areas. They know the patterns right now. They know which colors, which size of baits, what wobble of baits. I mean, they got it dialed in. You know, these are passionate muskie anglers who they guide for walleyes, they guide for muskies, they guide for everything. But I'll tell you what, on their free time, after a guide trip during the day, they're going back out on their own and fishing muskies. I mean, this is a part of who they are, and this is part of their being. I mean, you can really learn a lot going with a muskie guide. Not only are they going to take you and increase your chances, but they will provide the gear for you, and you're going to learn a ton about muskie fishing. You're going to learn a ton about how to handle a fish that's coming in on a figure eight, and how to catch more fish at the boat, how to properly do a figure eight, how to how to turn the lure, how to increase the speed, slow down the speed. I mean, all the nuances that these guys are dialed into, they're gonna impose upon that upon you. That's one of the advantages of going with a guide. And I'm not pitching guides one iota. I'm really just saying that those are the advantages. So sometimes it's worth it. It just saves you time, and it'll give you a much better experience in the water.
I'm not ready for fall to be over yet, but one thing I do look forward to when winter gets here is ice fishing. It's probably time to start thinking about that. And let's start off like so. New winter regs normally come out, what, December 1st they go into effect, Joe?
I think so, yeah.
When do you think we'd find out if there's going to be some changes up there?
Yeah, there's going to be no changes for this winter. So my understanding is that what Brett is talking about is there's a couple proposed rule changes for Lake of the Woods, and one of them is for ice fishing, the limit of fish for ice fishing. And you know, that proposed rule has gone through, you know, much of its course of all the things that it has to go through with public meetings and input sessions and things like that. So if that comes to fruition, that won't happen until I believe it's going to be March 1st, if I'm not mistaken.
So it would take place with the spring fishing then, and then fall
yes.
and winter. Okay.
Yep. So really, this winter, the limit of walleyes and saugers will be like it has been traditionally for other winters. And that's going to be a combined limit of 8 walleyes and saugers. Up to 4 of those 8 can be walleyes. And then on top of that, I mentioned the slot limit, 19 and a half to 28 inches. You throw them back, you can keep one fish per day of 28 inches or actually over 28 inches. So, you know, when you're looking at most buckets of fish, you know, some people will keep an over to Monset or whatever, but a lot of those big fish go back, get a couple pictures quick and get that fish back. And then, you know, most people are filling their buckets with saugers and walleyes. And, you know, along with the saugers and walleyes, when you're ice fishing Lake of the Woods, you're going to be catching fish too that are kind of off the radar screen. You're going to be catching some jumbo perch. You'll be catching some tulibies. You'll get a big northern once in a while, an eel pout once
eel
in a
pout.
While.
Yes.
Yeah, the pout. Bout with a pout, baby. A bout with a pout.
That's right.
Boy, I'll tell you what, those eel pout, you know, there are times when people are you know, there's a fish ripping drag and there's like a big walleye, and you pull it up and it's a pout. And, you know, for some people, it's like, you know, God, is that ever cool? For other people, it's like, ah, darn pout.
Yeah, they don't like them. It's funny, we talked about that with Hank Shaw this week, too, and how he really likes eel pout. And when I told him I do, too, he was happy to hear that because he knows a lot of people don't have the same love affair with the pout that we might have.
Well, the thing about the eel pout is that, you know, for many, many years, people would treat eel pout as a rough fish, and they'd throw them out on the ice, and really you'd see bald eagles and ravens and things out eating the fish on the ice. Well, you know, in the last 10 years, people have realized, hey, really what an eel pout is a freshwater cod. And you can take the meat on the back straps above the rib cage, as well as some tail meat off an eel pout, and you can cook it a different way. You can cube it, and then you boil it in either 7-Up or salt water. Some people even use Mountain Dew, and you boil it, and then you can dip it in butter, and it's got the consistency almost of lobster. So they call it poor man's lobster.
Right.
But for that reason, you know, I think the funniest darn story, Brett, is, you know, there are some young guys from the Twin Cities who had been up to Lake of the Woods for the first time, and they're in a sleeper fish house, and one of the guys caught a big eel pout. And of course, when he got it up above the, you know, in the hole and got it up, he grabbed it and that tail wrapped around his arm and it kind of freaked him out.
Yeah.
So he was really thinking about that. So when they went to bed in the bunk beds that night, he was on the top bunk. So they went to bed and he was thinking about that eel pout and couldn't sleep. So he got down and put covers on all the holes and went back to bed.
So. Oh, man. Well.
So, you know, the eel pout, it's just kind of a unique fish. And it's neat because when you get people who don't fish very much, they come up and, you know, instead of saying darn eel pout, they say, man, I know I'm going to get my walleyes and saugers. I hope I catch one of those eel pout. I mean, it's almost a novelty now.
Yeah, well, they're fun to catch. You know, that's the thing. As long as they're not wrapping everybody else's line up and then whatever. But they're fun to catch. They put up a good fight. And, yeah, you want to try cooking one up. They're delicious to eat. And I think they've got an interesting look to them. They've got some really cool color patterns to them. I don't know. I think they're interesting fish. And, Joe, if people want to go up there and catch eel pout this winter and maybe a walleye or two, if they if they want to plan a trip to Lake of the Woods, where can they go to get more info?
You know, first off, our Facebook page, Lake of the Woods Tourism's Facebook, is a good source. Otherwise, our website has all of our resorts. Check out our website. It's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Joe, thank you very much, and thank you for listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
You've been listening to Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors, on the Sporting Journal Radio Network. To listen to this show again, get the latest hunting and fishing news and more, visit sportingjournalradio.com.